And imagine you're on an unspoiled beach somewhere, sunlight streaming through the palm leaves. A paradise like this isn't easy to come by, but it does still exist. Because the Nature Conservancy works locally with people like you to save precious places around the world, forever. That way, closing your eyes will never be the only way to get there. I'm Paul Newman. Help save the last great places.
Visit the Nature Conservancy at nature.org. Nature.org.
And WUSB.FM, that's our website. We are WUSB Stony Brook. It's 6 o'clock, time once again for Off the Wall. Time for me to hit the right button this time. Let's just start that again. It's 6 o'clock, it's time once again for Off the Wall. Oh, that's better. whole theme. You happy? At least one person learned us to play the entire theme without talking over it.
I'm happy.
Well, you're also Kyle. I'm Emmanuel.
I know that.
Well, yeah, but people listening might not. Some people tune to us by accident, and they don't know what they're listening to.
Yeah, well, Emmanuel, now they know.
No, they still don't know that the program is called Off the Wall. Well, they might if they listen to the very beginning. And that
that part that you just said.
What?
That this is Off the Wall.
It is Off the Wall. Did I not mention that? It's Off the Wall.
No, you did. That's why I was saying that.
You're Kyle, I'm Emmanuel. This is Off the Wall.
That's how they know, and that they know that we're each other.
And if you're tuning in now, you just missed the theme. But we could play it again, I guess, and just be quiet for another 8 minutes.
I'm just so glad that the theme didn't ruin us being identified and the name of the show also being named.
Have we introduced ourselves?
I'm Kyle.
I'm Emmanuel, and this is Off the Wall. Actually, we shouldn't joke like that because it might confuse me. I told you earlier the state I'm in. This happens occasionally to me. It's not, you know, I feel I should just sort of talk about this a little bit because other people might experience the same thing and wonder what it is. I've actually, you know, had a doctor tell me this is okay. This is nothing to be worried about. It's like a kind of weird headache that you get that doesn't always hurt. You ever have one of those?
I get like sinus headaches sometimes, mm-hmm. So I'm familiar with congestion and the pressure, that kind of stuff.
Well, every now and then, maybe every couple of months, every several months, it starts with like this kind of flashing in usually it's my right eye, just kind of over to the right, and then I have trouble reading things. It's like there's something kind of getting in the way, like a bright light shining at you that prevents you from reading things. And then if I keep going, I have some trouble coordinating and like reading words or even writing words. It all goes away. Okay, that's got to stop. Hold on. No, there's a button there. There's a button. No, that's...
What kind of button?
Okay, first of all, you want to deflect that call. Deflect? It's accept or deflect. What a stupid choice.
The call has been deflected.
Okay, and now it says cancel after that. No, but there's a button there that says do not do what it just did.
Yeah. That's the kind of control we have here.
Okay, well, we're 1 second away from unplugging the thing. If that doesn't... Hit cancel.
I'll deflect it again.
But it's not... Oh, my God. No, deflect it, stupid
thing. All right, I've deflected.
Deflect it again. There's another deflect button.
Deflect.
There. Okay.
I can send it to another destination.
Yeah, send it to hell if you can. Can you do that?
I can send it to group pickup.
Oh, my God. We have to troubleshoot these phones on the air? No. Okay.
It's just a taste. We'll, I'm sure, have more experience with this.
No, but last week there was a choice there that said do not disturb or something along those lines. There it is. Ringer off. Hit that button.
DND on.
No, you hit the wrong button. The one that says ringer
no,
off.
No, do not disturb. DND.
Okay, fine.
DND... on. Remember that was counterintuitive, though?
Right.
Yeah, it puts a stop sign up here on the top with your hand. Sorry, everyone, for having to explain and be interrupted.
And the jerk who called us. Call us again. Let's see what happens
yeah,
this time.
Yeah, try it.
Yeah, go ahead. Give it a shot.
Yeah.
Where was I?
This is what you don't
want to do to me in this state. You're going to confuse me.
No, you were talking about flashes when...
So I get these kind of like bright not flashes so much, but just kind of like it's hard to read. And if I close my eyes literally and just sit relaxed for about 30 minutes, it pretty much disappears. It's some kind of a migraine type thing that happens. I don't really get migraines, but it does happen occasionally. And, you know, I've asked about this, and it's, you know, if you experience it, you should ask yourself in case you have other issues that go along with that might portend something else. But in my particular case, they said, yeah, don't worry about it. Just, you know, don't fly a plane or something while that's happening. But yeah, it's kind of weird when you're reading words that you normally are able to read and they just seem strange. Actually, I can do that no matter what. I can look at a word and after about 25 seconds, it'll look weird just by looking at it enough. To just kind of not be able to comprehend phrases, that's and to realize that you're saying things that don't quite make sense. It's scary, but it's also kind of interesting because you realize the mind is something that's not necessarily the way you think it is all the time, and that what we understand is one sliver of what's truly out there. I'm just happy when it goes away and when I'm able to converse normally again, which I assume I'm doing now. For all I know, though, I'm talking complete babble. And the way you're looking at me, I'm wondering if that is in fact what I'm doing.
No,
not making sense.
I'm waiting for
it to end. Yeah. Well, that's I think you have a lot of company there. So that's the state I'm in. So
no, I was going
bear with me.
I was going to say I was waiting for a spot to interject or otherwise contribute some of my own experience and knowledge to this interesting subject.
Has that ever happened to you? Something similar?
Well, what I was going to ask you as you were describing it is, it's maybe not associated, but do you ever get like a fluttering in your eye? I get that sometimes. But
you mean a
different.
Physical fluttering?
Or
like
it's like,
twitch?
Yeah, it's like twitchy.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's weird. I think it's from sleep or something like
you,
that.
You name a part of the body, and I've had a twitch. No, seriously. Twitch is everywhere. Yeah. It's
but
muscular
I get that sometimes.
Spasms.
Yeah, it's like you're
like, okay, what is it? Multiple sclerosis? What is it this time? You know, you go on the internet, and you go to WebMD, and you look up every possible thing it could be. And it's just an entire night of horror and dread. But lots of times also you just wind up reading forums from people that are going through real hell that have been diagnosed with horrible things. And then you feel a little bit better.
Yeah.
God, that's
I'm not done.
Horrible to say. But, you know, actually, if you go back into the archives, I think it's 2005. It's whenever I got back from my round the world by land and sea voyage. I think it was October of that year. There was a week I missed because I think it was the same thing. It was maybe a little bit more severe, but I didn't know what it was, and I wound up going to the hospital, and they didn't know my history, so they admitted me, and that's the first time I've ever been admitted into the hospital, and I was there for like 2 days. And
don't
they
do
said,
that.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with you.
Don't get admitted.
Well, I tried not to.
Generally.
But then I had the conversation with the doctor saying, no, you don't be crazy. You have to, and, you know, it's like they do on TV, where they basically are pleading with you on their hands and knees, like, this could cost you your life. You know, it's going to cost me a lot more than my life, though, with the money that it's going to cost. But fortunately, I had health insurance then, and it covered it.
The other thing that I was going to mention is eye fatigue. People like us, I think, and a lot of people now anyway, because people have screens in smartphones.
Oh, eye. E-Y. I thought you were saying eye fatigue and using fatigue as a verb, which is an interesting way to speak. No, you meant actual eye, the organ fatigue.
You know what? We can just start speaking in hieroglyphics if you want.
No, I just want to make sure I understand clearly because
right.
I need to do that.
Right. How many fingers am I holding up?
Five.
Okay, good.
Was I right?
Yeah, it was
You've
five.
Been doing this all day.
Yeah. All right. No, but...
you can put
you
down your hand now.
Let me get a thought out, please.
Oh, you did put down your hand.
I was just wanting to describe the defocusing when you've been looking at a screen or reading things. Because I tend to read a lot more news on the computer or on the web now, and so you end up not looking at print under natural light, but rather you're having a bunch of little light sources flashing at you, but I defocus a little bit sometimes if I've been looking at a screen too long, and it gets a little distressing because I can't focus. My eyes want to relax and not be like focused as much sometimes. And
so, if you were reading a newspaper, that would not be the case, right?
I think it's attributed to spending a lot of time looking at screens. And not taking breaks, not taking naps. There's a whole host of things ergonomically you should do if you're a visual artist. Work with digital photos, or you do long bouts of writing.
No, you're right, because you know when you say that, I realize I edit a magazine. I spend a lot of time looking at a screen, but then I take breaks. But I realize that when I take breaks, I basically do something social, also looking at the same damn screen. So I'm not taking a break from the screen. I'm just switching from one task to another. And yeah, my eyes are probably feeling that. And that's probably why this happens occasionally and probably happens to a whole lot of other people as well.
But since it's spring and
it's not spring, it's February, it's winter, it's the dead of winter. And just because it's 70 degrees outside, do not let your guard down. Okay, winter is coming. All right. Winter is on the way. It'll get here soon.
You just take your break in the potting shed and you start gardening, and you have this natural green foliage and little buds and sprouts, and it's a nice way to not be looking at a screen but be taking a break. You're with nature, and you get to see the season come in as the rush of spring showers and warm air just overtakes your entire aura and calmly relaxes you into a soothing, alert, and refreshed state.
Namaste. whatever floats your boat. Yeah, absolutely. No, and Kyle has been going out, getting seeds and earth and doing all these nice things, which are very positive. You're absolutely right. I'm just saying it's February. It's kind of hard to get into that mindset.
Well, no. Mid-February on Long Island is when you're supposed to start sprouting. So if you're getting your marigolds...
Sprouting or planting?
No, you get the seeds going.
Okay.
So if you've got to get your like herbs, your basil, you know, rosemary is really good. Little things like that. I've been looking at different things like vertical planters, you know, so you could just have like all your herbs just right out on the porch or something and say you want to like throw some fresh, you know, basil in your meal or your pesto or whatever you're doing, you've got it right there. So, and there's a lot of other good plants that are healthy, for inside the house and so on and so forth, relieve the air of toxins and so on. So it's that time of year. You got to get going around mid-February. We're in zone six. Of the climate zones in New York State, I think there's zone seven is the coldest. So, and zone one is, I think, maybe one of the warmer, or it's vice versa. Maybe it's one of the warmer temperatures, but we're zone six. And so there's a chart for certain plants and you start around mid, like late February, early March.
Okay.
Definitely.
Well, I mean, it takes a lot just to get into that mindset.
Well, and it's these like very simple little things, but it's timed with the seasons and you kind of got to watch the weather and, you know, like it just you start realizing it. It is happening sooner than you might think. Well, although I am hopeful if there's a little bit more snow, that'd be great. That's fine.
Well, snow is good. Snow is actually healthy for growing things. It sets the ground up with moisture and all that kind of thing and makes the bugs come out when they're supposed to.
I was just going to mention the bugs. When you have these less frosty winters, they tend to either they'll start to come out and it changes their season a little bit or the sort of length or amount of bugginess you get. I was also looking at plants that attract butterflies.
You showed me that yesterday.
Well, these are native Long Island species. That's another thing I'm pretty passionate about is habitat restoration. So if you do plant stuff that's native to Long Island.
Okay, that's a good idea because that'll encourage the species that are supposedly strong here
absolutely
to remain strong.
And it keeps the invasive ones down. But there's a whole swath of the native plants that are butterfly attractants, which I thought was really cool.
Wow.
Insect gardens are kind of in vogue. People are, I think, starting to get back into...
I'm into attracting more butterflies, more bees, earthworms, ants. And we see a lot of nature. We've been watching nature lately. And it's really incredible, on Long Island especially. There are swans.
There is so much.
Massive amount of swans that we've been watching. And, you know, when it was really cold last week, there was snow and ice. They're still in the water. They're in the water. They're just sort of hanging out, dozens of them. And you have to ask yourself, why? Why are you guys in the water? You could be on land. You wouldn't be getting all cold and wet. But they're made for that. They are so made for just sitting in the water all different temperatures. You don't think about this. But that's part of how nature is designed. And you have all these other animals walking around. You got raccoons. You got even squirrels are out. You think they're hibernating. They're not. They're out in the winter. There's deer everywhere. And they're all just kind of coexisting.
But just the seabirds. I mean,
you're
talking about one bird, but there are a whole lot. And we are really blessed to have so much in the way of waterfowl around here.
Yes.
And they just – it's so interesting how they sort of – interact and have boundaries and not, and they kind of warble and coo and just
that's
they make their funny noises, and then you have morning birds, of course, and it's just really interesting the intersection of all of them.
We have ducks, we have geese, we have swans. Those are the three big water birds. I don't count seagulls for some reason. They're different. But the ducks, the geese, the swans, they all kind of hang out together. The ducks, we know what they sound like. They quack. I feel like a third grade show now. geese, they go honk or whatever.
No, come on. Give a real
I
duck
can't
sound. Come on.
Make either of those sound. Very
quack,
bad at
quack.
Okay, that's duck.
That's a good duck.
And the goose, can you do a goose?
Ah!
Whoa, that's surprisingly good. Wow.
I don't know.
No, that's really good.
Wow. Yeah, that's kind of like a donkey, though. I don't know.
Interesting. Okay.
You can make that your ringtone.
Can you do a swan?
No.
No, because no one has ever heard a swan make a noise. You know, the only noise I hear a swan make is if you walk up to one, it'll hiss at you. It will do that. You should try that someday, Kyle.
No.
And other times you'll hear them. They do fly. They do fly, but they don't fly very often. But when they fly, their wings hit the water. So you hear this, like, kind of flapping noise on the water.
I read this a little bit more in depth after you and I had talked about it, I think, last week. And we were trading some info.
Oh, my God.
Now
the other phone is ringing.
Oh, nice try, people. Nice try.
Wow. We have two phones, yeah, and they're both set up to ring. Okay. Deflect. You keep talking. I'm going to fix this.
Anyway, they need a really long space to take off.
Stay away.
But they are one of the largest flying birds there is. They have enormous wingspans, and they do fly. But they simply need quite a bit of space, whether land or water, to actually get going and get airborne. And thus, they don't tend to fly all that far in their native habitat. They just sort of get a little bit of airborne, you know, get going to move quickly to something adjacent or in their vicinity. They're not going on sort of long trips. They just relocate as their hunting and foraging dictates. Wow. We know a lot about nature.
You do. But do you know why we don't eat swans? Because we eat everything else. But I've never seen – I guess we don't eat seagulls. But, again, I don't count them. But we eat ducks. We eat geese. Although I've been trying to eat a goose for a while. That doesn't sound right when I say it like that. But look, in England, people eat goose for Christmas, and I wanted to do that this year, and I couldn't find a place that sold. I found a place that sold ducks and rabbits, but I didn't want either of those. I wanted to have a goose, but I've never seen any reference to eating a swan anywhere. And can you imagine? You know, at Thanksgiving, sometimes you get the turkey neck. Oh man, the swan neck—that would be something, wouldn't it? It's probably really disgusting, but I don't know why people don't eat swans.
I think it is. There are recipes for it, like particularly pies, I think, like of the sort of British type.
A swan pie.
I think there are recipes for it.
Leave it to the British.
No, I'm not sure what swans in particular. There are several species, but there are old pie recipes. I think Wikipedia's got references to them. But it's seldom done, I think, today. I will tell you, goose is, you got to be committed to doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people really, they have recipes. You've got to really do a good job. Otherwise, it can kind of go south.
I wouldn't know because I've never had a goose.
It can go south.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Except the Canada geese, apart from not being from Canada, they don't go south. They stay here.
Yeah, they really like it now.
They don't go north either.
Because we have garbage, we have dumps and stuff. Oh, okay, all right. Anyway.
Geese don't hang out in dumps.
Well,
and you know, you never see a swan on land either, like up maybe more than a few feet away from the shore.
Seagulls hang out at dumps.
Yes, they sure do. Maybe that's why I don't count them. You see geese wandering around on land sometimes. You sure see ducks. I saw a duck, actually, with some ducklings walking into the Stony Brook Union once.
Really?
That was awfully strange.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That was some time ago, though, probably. Not recently.
Yeah,
right?
They had an automatic door that opened, so they just walked through that.
They do know, yeah, the union's being...
Well, they won't... Well, yeah, the union's being destroyed right now, but...
Has anybody checked? What's going on with that?
We can drive by.
I don't want to get off track.
No.
We'll check later.
Oh, we're way off track, Carl.
We'll update.
We're way off. I had no idea we were going to be talking about headaches and geese and wildlife and plants and winter and everything except the big elephant in the White House.
You can talk a little bit more about weather than just the clouds and the sun and the rain. You know, there's a lot to our surroundings, and sometimes we don't want to talk about elephants.
You know what? We never introduced ourselves. The program is Off the Wall. This is Emmanuel. That's Kyle.
I'm Emmanuel.
No, I'm Emmanuel. You're Kyle.
And I'm Emmanuel.
No, you're not. You're just trying to confuse me because of my condition right now. Which
and
is
you're off the wall.
Confusable. I am. I try to be.
So tell me about this pachyderm.
Yeah, I guess that's President Pachyderm.
President Pachyderm.
Well, you know, we talked last week about how many things had happened in the course of a week. And this week, a lot more has happened. There was the press conference with Netanyahu.
Netanyahu?
Some reporter asked a question. And I think there was a grand total of two reporters that got to ask questions.
It was very terse.
It was, and it was about anti-Semitism, and Donald Trump chose to
talk about himself.
His electoral college wins. it was a real head scratcher. And then on Thursday there was the chaotic 1.5 hour press conference that he held against the advice of his advisors.
Did you see
which you should listen to the advice of your advisors. That's what they're for.
Did you see some of the reports about psychologists diagnosing and stuff? There was a news story
about
this.
Say he's not necessarily mentally ill, and to call him mentally ill is too much. I should mention, I'm watching The Kitten Academy.
oh, cool.
Yeah, we're big fans of The Kitten Academy. If you ever go to YouTube, that wasn't one of the kittens talking. That's actually the guy sitting in a chair right now. Kitten Academy on YouTube. Just look it up. And right now we're watching Charlie is the orange cat. He's the orange kitten. He was adopted to the Font family. Mother Font is named Ariel.
She's right in the center of the floor there.
Yeah, she's right in the center of the floor right now.
I thought you had a phone like patched in and somebody
air. I can watch Kitten Academy from anywhere. I can watch it from my phone.
I've seen you do that.
Watch it on TV. I can watch it on the computer. I bring it everywhere I go. And right now, that wasn't one of the cats you heard speaking. That's the human that occasionally comes in and feeds him. He's got something like 3 or 4 cats lying on him right now, and he's on the phone. And probably someone's texting him saying, by the way, is people talking about you on the radio?
They do a really, really fantastic job.
Charlie is the orange kitten, and he's already been adopted, but he's really rambunctious. And he was adopted twice, actually, adopted by the Kitten Academy, then adopted by the mother who had just given birth to other kittens that were younger than him.
I really like the photography with this channel. If he explained the technical setup, that would be really fascinating, I'm sure.
It's somewhere in Illinois, I believe.
Yeah, it's in the Midwest. But just the angles and the ability for them to quickly change things and tie it all together and change from daytime to nighttime, it's a really entertaining diversion.
Yeah, 24 hours a day, you can just watch what the cats are up to. And when you have a room of 5 kittens, there is no end to the shenanigans that they get up to.
Yeah, there's always, always, always something going on.
Oh, look at Charlie now. He's like basically kind of trying to smother him, I think. But, yeah, anyway, okay, so I'm going to turn down the audio in case, somebody says something that they're not supposed to say.
Yeah, the cats might start cursing.
And plus, he doesn't know he's on the radio, but we can watch this. And, yeah, check it out on YouTube. It's really cool. YouTube does live things. I mean, they've been doing it for a while, but I haven't really taken advantage of that, just, being able to watch something live.
Yeah, it's I think something we'll play with a little bit more because we have a lot of pieces for stuff like this, and it would not be it's not trivial, but it would not, I think, be too difficult to set up something that's really compelling, even for fun. Like, say we wanted a little prayer shrine.
Uh-huh.
To Donald Trump, like we had a little portrait.
Does Donald Trump have to be injected into everything?
A little candle and incense, and we could just put offerings to the portrait of Trump, and we could have a camera set up on that and burn things, make sacrifices.
Like burn the Trump effigy, maybe?
No. That's in the background. That's the picture, you know.
Uh-huh.
And we could have a live stream.
We're open to suggestion. OTW at 2600.com. Hey, we forgot to mention the name of the show. It's Off the Wall. You're Emmanuel. I'm Kyle. And we are here for another 7 hours.
How many fingers am I holding up?
One.
That's no.
Well,
okay.
You are. But you're holding 2 fingers up, but you are also holding one finger.
You know, FCC rules are going to require me to commandeer the board.
All right.
This is Kyle. That is Emmanuel.
Then who am I?
I have to start over.
And listener, who are you? That's the big question.
There's no one.
All right. So we were talking about, in case you
Netanyahu.
Lost track, we were talking about we were past that. We were at the hour and a half press conference.
Oh, yeah.
The next day.
The psychologist.
Trump just went crazy for an hour and a half. Oh. And yeah, psychologists said it's an insult to mentally ill people to call him mentally ill, which I think is probably true.
Well, is it unethical for them to diagnose him without having a visit?
Okay, but they're never going to get a visit. So right. how do you diagnose them? It's like the tax return in a different flavor.
That was the big news story. It was, I think Vice was doing a bit on it and going into detail and the professional associations. But it strikes me that people should be able to lend whatever insight they can to anybody's state. Somebody's heretical running down the street. It's good that people might advise them to get some help, and you're not exactly going to ruin your professional.
Because he's going to listen to advice. You know, he's not going to listen even to the people that are supposed to tell him things.
Yeah.
You know, he's never going to.
Anyway, let's get back to the...
I don't think he's mentally ill. I think he's just inconsiderate, a bombastic...
And says whatever he wants.
Yeah, you know, selfish, okay. Self-centered.
So what did we get? What did you get out of that one?
Imperialistic.
Yes, imperialistic.
Well, I mean,
that comes with the territory.
Nothing really surprising. Entertaining, of course, but nothing really surprising. Look, there was this thing a couple of days ago. You know, you heard about the incident in Sweden, and this administration so far has basically talked about three non-existent terrorist attacks and skipped over a whole bunch that don't fit into their MO,
and said nothing about the protests against them.
No, well, they don't talk about that. They don't talk about anything that doesn't fit their agenda. But the thing in Sweden, okay, now you recall that was on Saturday.
The massacre.
He didn't call it that. There is some exaggeration on our side, I think. He was giving a speech to his rally. This is what scares me because, you know, people are like, Emmanuel, you're overreacting. Don't talk about Trump like he's some kind of threat to democracy. You know, just, you know, okay, he's elected president. Everything's going to be fine. Just get worried if he starts having rallies. Okay, folks, now he's having rallies. Okay, it's you know, Hitler had his rallies. I'm not saying he's Hitler. He's going to be something completely different. But this is a fascist-type thing to have rallies. You know, rallies when you're already elected president, so you don't need to be getting people all riled up. He's saying things like the press are the enemy of the people. He literally said that this last week. He said the press, and that includes us, are the enemies of the United States people. And as there are people in the United States at his rallies walking around with T-shirts that basically are calling for execution of people in the media. And it's not going to take long for somebody with a screw loose to do something about that, you know, to act on those words, to think that they're getting some kind of a message. And it's unfortunate, but that is his reality. So, yeah, we should be concerned when he's saying things like that, when he's holding these rallies that you know, summon up hatred and fear. So, I don't think that's an overreaction.
To say nothing of the suppression of journalists that are covering other things and actually putting themselves in harm's way to be on the ground and make stories about whatever is going on and whatever's prescient, and that has been a big theme with regard to the pipeline protests in South Dakota. There are several of them being charged with all kinds of different things, being lumped in with people, their credentials not being respected, not following commands even though they were, just complete irreverence to the fact that they're there and should be respected.
Well, now, but getting back to the Sweden thing, which is what I was bringing up a while ago. So he said this thing about Sweden, about the what happened in – well, he didn't really say. I don't have the exact quote in front of me. But he was giving this speech at his rally with 10,000 people saying that I can't believe – you know, Sweden last night, just can't believe it. It was this disjointed statement, which at the time when you heard it for the first time, everybody said, what happened in Sweden last night? And, of course, you know, Sweden themselves were like, what's going on? What are you talking about, Mr. President? We have no idea what you mean. And then when you realize that he's talking about a Fox report that he saw on TV the previous night, and you kind of go into that statement with that knowledge and then maybe inject your grandfather into it and how he might refer to something that he saw on TV last night as something that happened last night, you know, in the midst of trying to make a point. Yeah, that thing last night, you know, on TV in Sweden, who would believe? You know, very kind of emotional and not really getting the points in a row.
Incoherent, I think, is the word.
I don't want to say you know,
not
people's
succinct.
Grandfather are incoherent, but just not presidential, not you know, thinking it through, just talking with emotion.
Right. In court, I think you'd call it hearsay or like, I don't know, circumstantial.
I would call it heresy.
Hyperbole. You know, the other thing I got out of that, one of his rallies or just the way it's portrayed, is the Palm Beach thing. I heard a foreign reporter, I think CBC or BBC, describing it as a stadium. This is in regards to the rallies.
Uh-huh.
It was in an airplane hangar, but because it was big, it was, uh-huh. and even Trump remarked in the speech he was talking about, this is where they keep the big planes, you know, whatever. But then it gets exaggerated as it circulates around the world into him filling a stadium on Saturday. And that's just like a pundit or somebody, a commentator, who's been introduced to like give color on the entire thing. But these things get blown out of proportion and become like the biggest thing ever, even though they're comparatively small to all the other actions that are going on around the country
yeah.
and in the world. And it I don't know.
And there are actions. There are actions everywhere. Setauket had a protest yesterday. Not my President Day. Because yesterday was President's Day. Happened right on the corner of Route 25A and Bennett's Road. Thing is, you know, I was looking for actions around here. All right. 100 people, 200 people showed up at this thing. I would have been there. I would have been there if I knew about it. And I was looking for information about it, and I didn't find it. And found out about it the next day in Newsday when they did a big story on it. But this is the problem that we have on our side, is the lack of getting the word out, the lack of drawing more people in. So many people want to get involved and are trying to get involved, but not hearing about things. And I think, you know, we're kind of connected here. We're, you know, talking to lots and lots of people, and lots of people don't hear about these things. So we need to do better. We need to do better as far as getting the word out. You mentioned Standing Rock, and I think Standing Rock really needs to do better because, okay, what is the plan? You know, we want to respect the elders and the traditions and all that kind of thing. But, man, if you ever had a front line to fight Trump, that is it. And there could be 100,000 people there next week if the word just got out that we want people to show up now. But instead, we're hearing mixed messages saying, oh, you know, it's too cold. It's going to flood. We don't want people trampling on the land. We don't want to pollute. We don't want to cause problems. Okay, fine. You know, all of that we can respect. But what's the ultimate plan? You know, I'm hearing, yeah, we're going to fight it in court. Okay, you're going to fight it in court. You're going to lose in court. No question about it. Then what's the plan after that? Because it's a sure thing that you will lose in court. In fact, I think they might have already lost in court. So are we just going to, you know, to let it happen? Or are we, I know there's a call to take part in actions around the country. Great. But you know what? There's nothing that beats a unified front in one location.
So there is a split. There is a split. Chief Archambault is they've had like 230 truckloads of debris removed from the site. So those 10,000 people left a fairly heavy footprint.
Mm-hmm.
And he is communicating very directly with the leadership in the state and has a fairly serious appropriate interest in people's safety, his people's safety there. And now what it says for the future, that's an entirely separate thing.
The immediate safety, yes.
Now,
but the long-term safety, what about
not
that?
Not everyone agrees.
Mm-hmm.
There have been people who have maintained the ability to camp there and who stay there. And Wednesday, there is this order, 2 p.m., everyone must be completely gone. Now, as a representative for the Sioux Nation, Chief Archambault really does not want there to be debris floating into the Missouri River because it's pretty hypocritical.
Of course.
And a lot of people have helped and agree and share that. And it is also his position, it's also important to him that people are not forcibly removed. And there is a deadline on Wednesday. So they've been doing their best to keep it clean and to remove the people from that site. Now, the split has been people moving to another part, I think the Cheyenne Sioux,
okay,
who also had a pipeline put in under a river, I'm pretty sure. I'm not sure if it's the same reservation, but they're going to another part of the Sioux reservation in the area. I'm sorry I don't have all my details in a line, but the point is they're creating a site there that has been similarly leased or otherwise reserved property on the reservation, reserved on the reservation. That sounds weird. But they have property set aside to have an additional encampment outside of the Ocheti Sacawan site, which will be melting soon and thus needs to be cleaned
the
out.
The site that they're moving to, is that anywhere near where the Dakota Access Pipeline is being constructed? Will they be able to stand in the way of it? Will they be able to actually be seen by the people that they're protesting?
Well,
that's what I'm worried about, that you're going to have a camp someplace, but it's going to be irrelevant, and the thing will just get built in a couple of weeks.
Well, the drilling is going on, and if you've looked at the drill pad site, there's a couple drone videos and stuff. I don't want to go into too much craziness about this, but it's important to realize that there are National Guard military, like massive, I'm talking MRAVs, maybe not MRAVs, but Hummers, big Bearcat types, you know, SWAT vehicles and stuff that has been brought in either by the National Guard or in association with the Morton County Sheriffs and so on and so forth. And they're on site with the company.
But weren't there 5,000 veterans that were preparing to stand up for the anti-pipeline people?
It's
weren't
true.
They there to apologize to the Native Americans?
Many of them have returned to offer assistance and are absolutely still committed to that. But as I said, there's a divide. There is a moving of camps, and there have been several moves, small moves. People moved to a site that was on a hill. Chase Iron Eyes, I believe, was arrested. He's an attorney and was put in jail along with a lot of other people when they tried to set up TPs. That was that whole thing where there was some rumor of them burning the TPs. There's actually a couple TP poles that I think were burned or about to be burned or partially burned. But so many of these moves have been going on in conjunction with this anticipation of the spring flooding. But there are differences of opinion within the movement there. And I think everyone's interest is safety, of course, but people have different levels of commitment and different philosophies around what they will and will not let happen. What I will say, though, is that there are going to be people there, and they are watching, and they are aware, and they know darn well what these companies are doing, how well armed they are, and they can continue to do reconnaissance. They can continue to get information out and make people aware of the actions of these banks and purported energy companies.
Well, now there's also reports that I asked about the veterans. I just went to APTN.ca, which is the Aboriginally People's Television Network in Canada. And they say members of Veterans Stand have started arriving in Standing Rock. They've come to help set up a new camp established by the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe. I think that's what you were talking about.
I was just talking about that.
They're arriving as the eviction deadline for the main camp looms. And that's the entire story. There's a video story here you can watch. Go to aptn.ca and you'll learn all about it. And try to watch their daily newscast, because I think they're the only major media outlet that is covering this story on a regular basis. Maybe Vice News is as well, but not many more. And we need to get the word out and follow this story and give support to people that are putting their lives on the line.
There's some other interesting stories that are somewhat related to this story that involves the New York State leadership, which I think is really important. I just want to briefly mention that, since we're talking about energy. A couple months ago, New York Attorney General joined the Massachusetts Attorney General, Maura Healey.
Can I just say, the New York Attorney General, look him up. There's a story about him. He wants to be Trump's number one enemy. He literally, that's his goal. And he's making a lot of progress. And I think we should all support him to make him Trump's number one enemy. And I'm proud that our state's Attorney General wants to do that.
Yeah, yeah. And this is important. It's he is fierce, and I think Healey is as fierce as well. The two of them and other states are involved in this. I think up to 14 states attorney generals said they were committed to helping, but these two were sort of the first to go in, the canaries in the coal mine. And one of the things Schneiderman's spokesperson said about this was, with Exxon's former CEO now serving as President Trump's Secretary of State, we're not surprised that Exxon's lobbyists were able to buy another flimsy House subpoena. Now, that House subpoena was basically they were going to try to get Healey to have to fly down to Texas and be deposed. And she's flatly refused to comply.
Okay.
And continued to refuse to comply. And essentially, what Exxon's doing and what they call this is jury or venue shopping. They're trying to find a friendly judge.
Yeah.
Someone in Texas who's got kids on the high school team and they got their new house with the deck they're putting on with the new pool.
Okay. I know someone that did that, Kyle, and their voice stayed that way. So
all right. So anyway, they got to get somebody who they can make feel good and powerful and rich or whatever, just like them.
Yeah, your voice still sounds that way.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, be careful.
Can't make it go away. And the really galling thing is, and the thing I thought was hilarious is the Republican members on a committee mm-hmm. who are trying to hold hearings are saying that Schneiderman and Healey, in making these claims, are stifling the free speech rights of scientists who dispute man-made climate change. And this is...
is that what it is?
Yeah, and this is in a Bloomberg article about this. It's a U.S. House steps up effort to derail Exxon climate probe. It's an interesting article. It's worth a read. I'm not gonna tear it apart right now. I have lots to say, but suffice to say, this case is going to go on, and they're on the hook. They don't want to be, and they, I think, feel they have a lot more of the wind at their back, so to speak, with the Rex and the new administration, the EPA, and everything. But this is really important work because the states coming together as a coalition. They have a right to do this, mm-hmm. and this attempt to derail their probe is federal intervention.
And the federal intervention is going to get a lot more support from the people that are being put in charge now. So it's going to become a lot harder to stand up for the environment and to put forth these facts because you're going to have the weight of the federal government against you. But that's the reason why we need to step it up.
Yeah, and one last thing is this class action, there's not really a lot of news and information. There's a lot of attorneys' notices. Hey, were you a former investor or whatever, basically saying you could get in on this class action. But the probe is to find out if Exxon knew and misled investors about the impact of climate change. Mm-hmm. If you think about that, it doesn't even really include people who are really affected in the environment. We're talking air quality. We're talking pollution, spills, on and on and on and on and on. All of those fall on effects that compound health issues, et cetera. This doesn't even include that. And Exxon, they know that if they have to answer their investors, what happens when the consumers see that as precedent?
Right.
So this is very, very powerful. And this company is massive and has led an industry that has profited in massive, massive ways. And they want to profit off of clean and greenwashed technologies only insofar as they remain the top dog monopolistic entity in charge of it all. And I don't think they deserve that. And I think a lot of other people agree with me.
You know, there was also, there are a lot of things. Maybe if we hadn't spent so much time talking about ducks and swans, we would have more time to talk about all the protests that are going on. Or maybe it's good to kind of balance it out. But there were protests last week for immigrants, people that basically serve us all the damn time and are getting no respect.
The day without immigrants.
Yeah, and some people apparently have had to pay for that day with their jobs. There was one particular case. There were apparently companies throughout the country that fired people that took the day off from work. I think it was last Thursday. To basically show the world or show the country how important immigrants are and many times undocumented immigrants, but people who still are doing jobs that none of us will do. And, you know, if you're upset at that, then go and do the job, you know, and or go point the finger at the person that hires the undocumented workers. But don't point your finger at the undocumented workers who are here to get a better life, to help their families or to escape oppression or all kinds of things that you would be doing, too. But in any event, here on Long Island, a place called Ben's Kosher Deli came under attack for allegedly firing workers who stayed away from work last week to observe the nationwide Day Without Immigrants protest. Now, Telemundo, the Hispanic network, one of the Hispanic networks, reported that the Long Island Jewish Eatery dumped 25 workers after they took part in the anti-Trump protest. However, and, you know, I was following the story, too. I've been to this place, and I was really upset to hear this, and I said, I will never go to that place again if they treat people that way. They have fired back, insisting it only fired an unspecified number. I think they later said one.
Oh, only an unspecified.
Of protesting workers who sought to intimidate colleagues for working on that day. Well, I don't know. You know, there might be something to that.
Okay, wait. So that's misreporting.
Well, I don't know.
Or it's unclear.
It depends who's telling the truth. They asserted any workers who simply joined the protest are free to return to work.
So how did it get reported that way? Because that's an entirely different issue.
Apparently, the story I heard in Newsday was, I read it, except that Newsday wants us to pay to read the story here on this site, on our website, our browser here. There was one worker who was, in their words, intimidating other people, either to get them to take a day off work when they didn't want to or something along those lines. And that person was fired. And then when that person was fired the next day, he caused a scene and the cops had to be called. And apparently all these other people were outside thinking they were fired, which sounds a little bit far-fetched that they wouldn't even go inside thinking they were fired. I don't know. But right now, and this is what's important, they're saying that everybody is welcome to come back, except maybe for the one guy that had the dispute, call them on it. Show up for work. Go back. And don't let them get away with this. And if, in fact, they did not fire people just for showing up at the demonstration, then don't boycott them. But let's find out the truth. That's the deal with Ben's Kosher Deli here on Long Island. And just one other thing related to that, and then we have to go. I saw an article about the number of refugees in Long Island. It's shocking. I mean, you know, they are pouring across the border. There's no question about it. Flooding all the neighborhoods everywhere. Do you know that since 2007, a total of, you know how many from Iran and Iraq have settled on Long Island? 125. 125 refugees have settled from Iran and Iraq, pouring across the border. I mean, look at these. There's a whole chart here. There's a whole chart of every single neighborhood on Long Island and how many people have settled here from various parts of the Mideast. And, you know, most of the numbers are zero. There are so few refugees in our neighborhoods, yet the amount of anger that you are seeing towards refugees or towards immigrants of any sort is astounding. And it just really gets me angry to see all this hatred and reaction against an issue that's not even there in the first place. And if it was there, would not be anywhere near the kind of problem they're trying to make it out to be. So, folks, get the facts, learn something, and spread that information. You know, it's
people,
not right.
People would rather be ignorant and xenophobic than actually look at what's around them and educate themselves.
It is fun. It's fun to be ignorant and xenophobic. I'll give you that. But it's not helpful. And you really ought to get the facts and think about other human beings that are part of this, that are the actual people that, like I said, would be you. If you were in their position, you'd be doing the same thing. And let's try and be generous and giving and build a better world, better country as a result, because we're nothing but better for the efforts and contributions of immigrants. And we always have been. That is our magic here in this country.
It is. And don't just consume fear-ridden media that's, you know, like fast food, just because it's served up that way, you know, ready to go.
Right.
You really have to do the work and educate yourselves.
Absolutely. You know, we totally forgot to mention this is Off the Wall. Emmanuel, this is Kyle, and we have to go now.
Bye.
We're going to go out with one of our favorite artists who sends us music, Louis Ludwig, with an important message. And stay tuned for Finn and a couple hours of awesome material. Write to us, otw@2600.com. We'll see you next week. Did I forget to hit the button again? Oh, boy. Okay, I'll hit the right button this time. I'm sorry. There's too many buttons. Good night.
In my juvenile days, not all that I'd say was especially friendly or kind. But lucky for you, the value was true when I gave you a piece of my mind. Ah, but somehow, in the years between, all the words seem to lose what they used to mean. Now it literally kills me that totally everything's awesome and pretty okay. Well, I hear you, just got nothing to say. What passes for arguments, nothing but sentiment wrapped in a buzzword or two. Ad hoc and ad hominem, well, so's your mom and him. I'm rubber, you're nothing but glue. And I wonder if even you comprehend the point of this verbal barrage that rolls without end. Now Shakespeare is twirling and Lincoln is hurling. Jesus just tweeted, oy vey. As for me, boys, I got nothing to say. Radio, turn off the internet, the TV and all the smartphones. Slip on the lock, and if someone knocks, please tell them that I'm not at home. It's golden, the silence that flows when you give up on telling them every damn thing that you know. From a man who talks from the time he wakes up straight through to the end of the day. It might surprise you, but I got nothing to say. Hey, I got nothing to say. Talk amongst yourselves.